Let's get our scriptures first. Let's see, Will, you get Luke 9, 51 to 56. Gabe, can you get Luke 9, 51 and 52? Nathan, Luke 9, 53. Brian, Matthew 15, 16. Johnny, Matthew 16, 23. Isaac, Luke 9, 54. Let's see. Trevor, Luke 9, 55. Daniel, Proverbs 12, 1. And then Daniel Swope, Luke 9, 56. Okay. By way of illustration, when I was door director, I remember vividly dropping the ball on scheduling an outreach that Pastor Greg specifically told me he wanted done a certain way. And if we're being honest, I actually thought I had a better idea, and so it was borderline intentional that I did not schedule this outreach. And the result was Pastor Greg had to correct me. He had to point this out. He had to say something about it. But the thing that he told me that was such a revelation was he said, "Stephen, here's the problem with you not listening to my instructions." He said, "Today, it's an outreach, but when you're out on the field, it's going to be people's lives." And that was a revelation for me. And I can tell you there have been situations, not only when I was pioneering in Denver, pastoring in 29, here in Prescott, there have been moments where Pastor Greg will give specific instructions, and when you listen to them, you follow through with that wisdom, it really does change the course of people's lives. And so I want to teach a very practical lesson this morning. I think it's a critical element and a critical dimension for every single disciple. That is to be able to take correction from your pastor. And so how you handle that, how you deal with that, will greatly determine where you end up in ministry. And so that's what I want to do this morning. I want to look at taking correction out of Luke 9, 51 to 56. Go ahead, read that.
When the days grew closer for Jesus to be taken up to heaven, he was determined to continue his journey to Jerusalem. So he sent messengers on ahead of him. On their way, they went into a Samaritan village to get things ready for him. But the people would not welcome him because he was determined to go to Jerusalem. When his disciples, James and John, observed this rejection, they asked, "Lord, do you want us to call down fire from heaven to destroy them?" But he turned and rebuked them, and they all went on to another village.
Okay, then my translation adds a little bit more. It says, he turned, rebuked them. He said, "You do not know what manner of spirit you are, for the Son of Man did not come to destroy men's lives, but to save them," and they went to another village. Okay, let's look at taking correction. I want to look firstly with you at the ministry journey. In ministry, whatever level you're at, you're going to experience new things. And the foundation or the essence of what discipleship is, it rests on whether or not you are teachable. The word disciple, it means learner. To be a learner means you are admitting you do not know certain things. That is the essence there. To learn something does you no good unless you're able to apply it to your own life. So a disciple is taught certain things and then released to apply them. This could have to do with a lot of different things. It could be outreaches. It could be preaching at a concert or preaching on an outreach, writing a Bible study, working with people. It could have to do with scheduling outreaches. It could have to do with working with people in the church, how to involve different ministries in the church. And so a disciple, you're released to do many different things. And baked into the discipleship cake is you will step out and do things that will not work. You'll try things, you'll pursue different ministry endeavors that won't have the results that you're looking for. And more to the point, you will make mistakes. You'll drop the ball, you'll say something stupid, you'll do something stupid. This is all part of discipleship. There will be problems you did not expect because you're doing something new, because it's a new thing. Read Luke 9, 51 and 52.
As the time drew near for him to ascend to heaven, Jesus set out for Jerusalem. He sent a messenger ahead to a Samaritan village to prepare for his arrival.
Yeah, that's it. So this is a basic ministry task for Jesus. He tells his disciples, hey, we're going into this town. We need a place to stay. We need a place to sleep for the night. We need accommodations. That's your job. Go into the town. Do your job. And so that's a pretty simple task. Go there. Prepare the place for Jesus. But according to our text, it didn't work out that way. Luke 9:53.
But the people there did not welcome him because he was heading for Jerusalem.
So they basically said, no, you're not welcome here. That was the response. So there you go. The disciples, they've run into a problem. There's an issue. And so in discipleship, in your discipleship, you will run into new problems. You see, being a disciple means you're trying things that sometimes don't work. I can remember many outreaches that were flops, that nobody got saved. I can remember preaching 180 altar calls where nobody got saved. I can remember trying out many different things. You write Bible studies that halfway through you realize, this is terrible. I should stop right now. Ideas where it's like, man, in my head I felt like this was good, but it's garbage. It ends up confusing, and people are scratching their head wondering what you're doing. In ministry and working with people in the church, you'll let people down. You'll offend people. You'll rub people the wrong way. This is all part of ministry. That's because this is a training ground for future ministry and future usefulness. And this is the hope. Where you are today as a disciple is not the end of the story. And it's not where you're going to be down the road. Men here, you will be pastors someday. You will be counseling marriages someday. You will comfort people who've lost loved ones. This is a powerful dimension here. You will, you'll deal with psychos. You'll deal with rebels. You'll have to listen to Pastor Greg's advice and apply it to whatever situation you're in, Pastor Greg's or Pastor Jesse's. You will all experience failure. I've experienced failure. I've experienced in ministry, made the wrong call, done something stupid that Pastor Greg had to confront me on. Pastor Greg had to correct me on. And the essence of our text, Jesus is correcting the disciples. And you see this through Jesus' ministry. The disciples are following him around doing dumb things, and Jesus has to correct them. Matthew 15:16.
So Jesus said, are you still without understanding? Do you not yet understand that whatever enters the mouth goes into the stomach and is eliminated?
So my translation says, are you still so dull? Ouch. Jesus, you're calling me dull? It's like, that hurts. Matthew 16:23.
But he turned and said to Peter, go behind me, Satan. You are an offense to me, for you are not mindful of the things of God, but the things of man. So
open rebuke and open correction from Jesus to Peter. And so this is part of ministry. And so a common trap in discipleship, and I'll give you a hint, it all centers around pride. This is where many disciples can find themselves. Number one, there's a fear of looking stupid. So I do whatever I can to avoid looking stupid, to avoid getting corrected. I've seen many disciples enter into this trap. I don't want to step out in anything unknown because it might fail and then I look bad. There's also a fear of pastor correcting you. You have the disciples that never ask questions. Disciples that never invite criticism. Pastor, we did this outreach, it didn't work. What could we have done different? What do you think? Pastor, I'm in a conflict with somebody, or I'm in conflict with the last 50 people I've come in contact with. How do I change this? Because this isn't going to work in ministry. How do I fix this? But you have guys who, they never invite criticism, they never invite feedback from their pastor. As a disciple, remember, you're putting yourself before your pastor saying, Pastor, I want you to disciple me. And part of that means, Pastor, I want you to be able to correct me. Show me where I'm off here. And that'll greatly help you. Third trap in discipleship is the trap of assuming. The guy who assumes that he has all the answers, that he's been there before, seen that before. There's no reason for me to ask Pastor any questions or ask for any input or invite criticism because I've done all this before. Read Luke 9:54.
When his disciples James and John saw this, they said, "Lord, do you want us to command fire to come down from heaven and consume them, just as Elijah did?"
Brilliant. This is their plan here. People are annoying to us. People did something mean to us. They made us feel bad. So they should all die. That would be an unhealthy mindset in approaching ministry. And so what is revealed here for James and John was their heart attitude. People are the problem. And Jesus must view people the same way I do. And that was an assumption. And they're saying, yeah, this is what should happen. Elijah did it, so maybe we could do it too. And then we won't have people problems. We'll just ask God to fry them all. And so let's look then secondly at being corrected. Because when pastor corrects you, this is an inevitable reality. You will be corrected by your pastor. Luke 9:55.
But he turned and rebuked them and said, "You do not know what manner of spirit you are of."
Jesus turns and rebukes them. This is in front of all the disciples. He's rebuking these guys. And the point of being corrected is number one, correction reveals what was formerly hidden. So the point of correction is to show you something you didn't see before. Proverbs 12:1.
Whoever loves instruction loves knowledge, but he who hates correction is stupid.
And so here, things that were hidden that we didn't see before, there could be issues of pride that pastor sees that you might not see. Issues of arrogance and insecurities, maybe rejection issues. And so pastor is trying to help. He's trying to pull these things out. So correction reveals what's hidden. Secondly, correction is meant to cause disciples to analyze themselves. As a disciple, your job is to be an analyzer. Not just an analyzer of things on the peripheral or things outside yourself, but analyze yourself. How am I a different disciple today than I was 6 months or a year ago? Do I still have the same people problems? Do I still have the same hang-ups? Do I still have the same issues when I'm preaching? Do I record myself? Am I getting better? Am I advancing? Am I doing anything different than I was years ago? And this is a critical component in discipleship, is analyzing yourself. The third thing that happens is correction is always future focused. The point of all correction is to help you avoid the same problems down the road. Think about James and John. Their answer to people problems was, "God, kill them all." And that wouldn't have been helpful in a ministry that was involved with helping people. Like, this was their job. Jesus wants them to go and spread the gospel and pray for the sick and meet the needs of others and be helpful. But their answer was that they should all die. And so correction, Jesus is pointing out, if you have this heart attitude in ministry, it's going to hurt you. And so this is the idea, is God is trying to show us something, that if you're going to be a different disciple today than you were months ago, you're going to need to be corrected. There's things that have to be taken out of you, things that don't belong. And so let's look at some incorrect responses to correction. The first incorrect response is we can feel in the moment of correction that pastor hates me. This is a place of insecurity, a place of rejection. As a disciple, you have to deal with your rejection issues before you get sent out. The old saying Pastor Greg said, I heard the first time, was ministry magnifies. So the kind of man you are today, you'll be a larger, more concentrated type of man when you're out on the field. So if you have insecurity issues today, those are going to be even greater when you're out pastoring. If you have pride issues today, those are going to be even greater when you're out on the field. That's because ministry magnifies. So the man who cannot take correction is the man who cannot move on in their discipleship. If you cannot be corrected by your pastor, you're going to stunt your growth as a man of God. And moving on into something greater that God has for you will never happen. Secondly, what can happen is we vent and spew pastor's correction to our wives and other people around us. I want to warn you, gentlemen, your wife is not a punching bag for you to spew all of the things that pastor has told you. Because she is a weaker vessel, she cannot handle that. Because what happens to your wife when you say, "Honey, I'm mad, I'm upset, pastor yelled at me." What does your wife think about pastor now? "Pastor must hate my husband. I don't want anything to do with ministry if pastor hates my husband." Then her view of pastor is different. And you might move on. You might, I said it, and we move on. You still have a relationship with pastor, but your wife is changed by that. And so part of being a man is you don't say everything you feel. That's a good one. You could write that down for free. And so the other thing here is failure and correction, they are part of discipleship. And if you cannot handle that, I predict pain in your future. Thirdly, we view all of life through the lens of our screw-up and our failure. So this is a dangerous thing to get into when you're a man of God, you're a disciple. Pastor has to correct something in you. He sees something in you, and you think, it's not the issue or the problem, it's me. I'm a loser. I'm a failure. I'm a screw-up. Pastor hates me, right? We interpret pastor's correction as a value statement against us. Like, I'm a worm. Pastor must hate my guts and doesn't want me to succeed. Pastor got on my case because I forgot to bring microphones to an outreach or because I put the wrong date on the flyer. I'm a worthless human being. No, you just forgot microphones. And if you do that when you're pioneering, it's going to hurt your outreaches. And so pastor is trying to help you avoid pain in the future. Okay, so let's look finally then this morning at the blessing of correction. Because we need to understand the motivation that pastor has in correcting disciples. The blessing released in our lives when we respond correctly to correction. Number one, pastors care about your development as a man of God. At the core of correction, your pastor wants you to enter your destiny. Think about that. Pastor corrects you because he wants your ministry to grow, because he wants you to be fruitful, because he wants you to see the supernatural. Pastor wants your ministry to be built. And so this is critical. We read this in Luke 9:56.
"The Son of Man did not come to destroy men's lives, but to save them." They went to another village.
So in correction, Jesus is showing them, look, the way you view people is incorrect. If you view people the way I view people, this will help you in ministry. And this is what Jesus is doing here. Secondly, we can respond to correction in gratitude. The fact that pastor wants the best for you and wants you to avoid pain, that's a blessing. Like, wow, pastor, thank you. You corrected me on this issue or that issue because you want me to be helped down the road. And so looking at my calling, the ministry opportunities that I've experienced, it was correction from pastor that has built a framework that I have been able to build my ministry upon. And so this is critical for you as well. Thirdly, in correction, move on and don't pout. See, men get corrected and their response is to sulk and pout. Some men, they threaten, fine, I'm just going to leave ministry. I mean, I'll still come to church, but bag the whole ministry thing if pastor yells at me or if pastor corrects me. So, Pastor Greg said, women and children are ruled by their emotions. Men take their licks and they get on with life. So this is important. In correction, we take the lesson, we apply it, and we move on. There's still some men today, they've been corrected, and it's like they're still pouting. Like, I don't get that. Like, my kid, both my boys especially, I'll tell them, suck it up. Fix your face. Because you're corrected because I don't want you to get run over by a car. It's not because I hate you. You're corrected because I don't want you to murder your other siblings. And so in correction as a man of God, if your response is to pout, cold shoulder, avoid, skip out on ministry, then there's a problem there. There's an issue on the inside. And so we have to look at correction as being something that's a blessing. Finally, learn the lesson of correction. This is basic. If pastor corrects you, then that means there's something in your life that needs attention. Something in your life that needs work. If the check engine light in your car is on, the response is not put tape over the light so you don't see it. The response is, I wonder why the check engine light is on. Because if you ignore it and avoid it, there's going to be problems down the road. And it's more important in your life. Correction, there's maybe a minor rebuke. Pastor Greg, I could probably count on one hand the amount of times I've seen Pastor Greg actually verbally yell in all of his ministry. Correction is to help you. It's not, man, pastor's having a bad day. I don't think Pastor Jesse has ever gone off the handle and screamed in somebody's face. Correction is meant to help a disciple. Look, I don't want you to wreck your life here. If you understand this and you see this and apply it, then it can greatly help you down the road. If to ignore that would be foolish, you need to fix the problem. If it's pride, you need to humble yourself. If it's laziness, you need to work harder at it. If it's preaching technique, then record yourself and practice. Right? If you're not growing as a disciple, then there's an issue there. That's something you can work on. Our text says, they went on to another village. They moved on. How great was that? Jesus doesn't say, James and John, you guys stay here. Wallow in your self-pity and your misery. We're going to move on. The disciples, they move on to another city. And Scripture doesn't tell us, but I wonder if Jesus told James and John, guys, go into this city now. Find a place for us to stay. They moved on. And so that's part of discipleship. You take correction and you move on. Because Jesus wants you to be blessed. Your pastor wants you to grow and you to develop. So that is taking correction. Anyway, that's all I have this morning. If we have any questions or comments, we'll take those. Something you want to ask, something you want to know.
Yep. So when you're out preaching, if you have like an area leader or another leader of the area you're in or whatever, would you take correction from him the same way you take correction from your pastor?
Yeah, I mean, I would ask the question, why is the area leader correcting you in the first place? You know, what's going on that it has risen to that level? Like, you need to be openly rebuked by your area leader. Like, what was the circumstance? But in any case, you know, that's part of ministry, is men that are over you. It's like, can you receive that? Right? That hurts our pride. Because sometimes you'll be corrected and maybe all the facts aren't actually out there. And it's like, well, but wait a minute, there was this and that. It's like, well, what battlefield do you want to die on? You know, as a man of God, it's like, you know, we can take that, we can move on. But, you know, as a side note, you're pastoring and you have area-wide leaders, you should make it a point to do what you can to help them. Send them impact teams. Be a blessing to them. Support different events that they have. You build allies instead of enemies. So,
if you're a pastor and you have a couple disciples or even a bunch of them in this kind of setting, and you notice one of them is really struggling in an area that he's not necessarily hurting other people in the church, but he's just, something that you might have dealt with in the past. You can just tell he's got an area that he's really hurting him, but you're not close to him. You just pray for him to have revelation to come talk to you about it, and then you can speak into his life, or you just try to build relationships so that you can get in an area where you can mention it to him, you know?
Well, you started off by saying he was a disciple. So if you have a guy in your church that wants to be discipled, then that gives you an opportunity as a pastor to speak into their lives, to point out certain things. Now, you know, the balance for a pastor is, it's not our job to straighten everybody out, but it's a different you have a different relationship with disciples. You can speak into their lives. If they're flaking out on outreach or not coming to prayer, you can call them out on it. And the way you do that, you come alongside. Help me understand. I haven't seen you in prayer meeting in the past 3 or 4 services. Mm-hmm. What's going on? Oh, I'm just tired. Well, then you can deal with it that way. Or if it's, you know, I had to pick up extra hours, somebody in the house got sick, then you could deal with it that way, right? So it's all in a response. The point of, if you're a pastor and you're correcting a disciple, the point is, I'm going to humiliate them in front of the whole church. You take them aside. You speak to them. You communicate. That's very helpful. So if it's a disciple, then yeah, I would talk to them. If it's just somebody in the church that doesn't have any influence, then wait for revelation. But it all kind of depends on where they're at.
In response to Anthony's question, you said that even if all the facts or the details were incorrect, you would just not, there would be no explanation, there would just be, you just apologize even if the facts were incorrect?
Yeah, I mean, it depends on the situation. But at the end of the day, you know, it's not my job to square everything out, square everything up. Like, there have been plenty of times in Pastor Mitchell's ministry where not all the facts are out, but it's like, you know what, we just need to move on. Sometimes that's part of it. And that's a difficult thing, because it's like, we want to take them to court. We want to be like, here's all the facts. You've got this wrong. But sometimes the prayer is, God, you're able to sort people out much better than I am. And I've had situations where it's like, I take the low road and I leave them to God, and they've come to me and said, you know, I was wrong on this. Apologize, ask forgiveness, whatever. And great, you know, whatever, we move on. But if you make the focus of your ministry trying to square everything up and sort everybody out, you'll just be frustrated, because that's part of ministry, is sometimes admitting you're wrong when you're not. And that's part of life.
Admitting you're wrong.
Yeah.
Just thinking about what you said about moving on to the next village, and in light of correcting, like, as a disciple, one of the biggest things for me to learn was Pastor Rick, especially, to correct you and move on. But, you know, I took some very unhealthy correction, like, just blow up and then never talk about it again. And so what would you say, I mean, obviously you developed that and learned that being a director and whatnot, but what would be some things to elaborate on that, like developing that, having be able to move on, not take it personal, you know what I mean? It's not me, it's the thing I did, you know, versus...
Well, I think in today's generation, especially being in a fatherless generation, the problem is we interpret people in authority as wanting the worst for us. And so, yeah, maybe you had a bad experience with your father, bad experience with authorities, bad experience with this, that, the other thing. And we apply that to our pastor. And so understand that your pastor wants the best for you. He wants you to develop, wants you to be blessed, wants you to be effective in ministry. And a lot of times, men that have had rejection issues and insecurities like that, it carries over. And so pastor corrects and pastor moves on, but our attitude is like, I'm still back there. I'm avoiding. I'm not making eye contact. That's not healthy. Part of moving on is just moving on. Correction happened. This doesn't change my value or my worth. But that's the issue, is we make it a value statement. Correction is not the issue. It's actually, I'm a worthless human being, right? And that's not healthy. You know, and that's why Pastor Greg can move on, because it's healthy for the disciple. I can remember many stories of Pastor Josh Neal. You know, he's like, I'm amazed, Pastor, you corrected me on this issue, and then you moved on. And it was like, you were still my pastor. You still cared about me. You know, but he came from a background where that was not the way correction worked. It was humiliate and cold shoulder and ignore, and then maybe someday you'll get back in my good graces. It's like, that's not how Pastor Greg is. That's not how Pastor Jesse is. Somebody else? Other questions? Thinking?
You've never been corrected by a pastor before. It's some sort of new experience for you, and you kind of break every single rule. And then you look back on it, and you can see that, in hindsight, you still kind of feel guilty about it or bad. Obviously, moving on was the prime. Main point you made is to move on, but what if you still feel bad about it? What would you say is the first step?
Well, I mean, number one, as a disciple, we're not to be ruled by our emotions. And so even if you feel bad, even if you feel like you didn't get a fair shake, even if it was like, I didn't respond correctly to this, it wasn't a good situation, we can still move on and tell our feelings to take a back seat. Because when we move on, when we, you know, like for the disciples, Jesus said, let's move on, let's go to the next city. Like, wow, we wanted to kill all the people in that town that need Jesus, and now Jesus is telling us to move on. If Jesus can move on, then we can too, right? And you know, the other thing too is keep the door of communication open with your pastor. You know, and ask for help. Ask, can you pray with me? I'm not handling this correctly. I'm not processing this correctly. Yes, I know all the information. I know where I screwed up, but it's just I still feel. And you can ask those questions. Do I feel insecure? Do I feel rejected? Do I feel that my pride rose up? Do I feel like I didn't go about this the right way? Then God can help you through that, right? But biggest thing as a disciple, learn the lesson. The next time correction comes around, I'm going to apply these things that I've learned. I'm not going to react the way I feel. I'm not going to vent everything to my wife. And I'm going to move on, right? So the other thing too in controlling your emotions is you gotta learn to not wear them all on your sleeve. If you come into the house, I'm not hungry, sit down. And then your wife says, what's wrong? Nothing. Come on, that doesn't work. Yeah, speaking from personal experience. Yeah.
Is there a difference, excuse me, maybe in how you present it to your wife between venting and like informing her about this issue that you're having that pastor has corrected you on and saying, hey, keep an eye on me. I want accountability from my wife rather than saying, I'm mad at pastor. He said this and, sure. You know, coming at it emotionally and responding like that, but versus
our
like,
wives hear different things than we tell them.
Okay.
So we can try and be diplomatic and we can try and frame it and articulate it in just the right way, but it's like we give them this whole synopsis of the conversation in the office with pastor, and they pull out, pastor talked to me, he's mad. That's what they hear.
Yeah.
Because they are emotional creatures.
So it's not worthwhile at all to, in that situation, ever
present it to your wife. I would ask, what's the point? Obviously, if pastor's talking to you in the front, and everybody in the church can see, and your wife says, you know, what was that all about?
Yeah.
You know, well, I made a bad call on something, and pastor's helping me through it. Mm-hmm. We leave it at that.
Okay.
And if your wife is pushing and prodding and wants all the gory details, just be like, oh, it's not significant. You can move on.
Okay.
But most, 9 times out of 10, is we want an ally.
Okay.
We're rallying. We want people. And it's not just our wives. I'm not picking on wives, but it's other disciples. It's other people in the church. Hey, guess what Pastor told me then? It's like, what are you doing? Like, that doesn't make any sense. That doesn't help you. Because then what it does is it just makes people view Pastor in a different light too.
I see.
So you are the one being discipled. It's not all these other people. It's a conversation between you and your pastor.
Right.
That's just healthy.
Okay.
Because you got to think, the unintended consequence, if you're pastoring and you have an issue with a guy and you talk to him and he goes and spouts that to everybody in the church, it's like now there's some conflict.
Okay.
Right? It just makes your job harder.
So. Okay.
Don't make pastor's job harder.
I know it's a broad question. How do you communicate this to your kids? I've heard this a couple times from you guys as pastors, but growing up, I realized I was never communicated how to handle correction, because it was, it was mainly orders and consequences, not conversation and coming alongside. It was always coming at, which as a parent, I'm sure sometimes is necessary, but the last thing I want to do is communicate that, it's always, you do this and you're in trouble, and never actually coming alongside and having a conversation with my son or daughter. What's the best way that you do that with your kids?
Depends on age, right? My youngest daughter, I can't really explain to her why, sticking certain things in electrical outlets is unhealthy behaviors, It's just, no, don't do that, a swat or whatever.
Sure.
But with my other kids, explaining to them why this is not a good idea or why certain behaviors need to be corrected, that helps. They need to understand. If it's just beatings for everybody, it's not a good long-term parenting solution, because then you just raise children that resent you.
Sure.
Right? But when kids understand the why behind the correction, and they understand, like, now you have them repeat it, like, now why are you being punished for this? What's the reason? And then they tell you, because lying is bad. God doesn't like lying. Right, whatever. That's just explain to your children. And then the other thing too is don't be afraid to apologize to your children if you made a bad call. Like, you correct your kids, and it was actually the other one that did the bad thing, and you spanked the one that didn't do anything. And it's like, if you're like, wow, they deserved it because they'll do something bad in the future. That's not helpful. Then all it tells your children is that, wow, dad just flies off the handle and doesn't ask questions. He's not a very good investigator.
Sure. Yeah.
So you explain to your children. You apologize. Say, hey, that was a bad call. Hey, I overreacted there. Right? But you come alongside your children, you explain to them, communicate, it's because I love you, because I care about you, right? That helps. Yeah.
I find it very important for my wife to know that I'm not stagnating or falling off or changing from the vision and the sort of passion that we have for God mentioning when we got married. How do you maintain that sense that we're in God's will and moving forward when you're in a season that might be more about learning, being God, serving as a shepherd?
I think one thing Pastor Greg has taught me is it's important to bring your wife along in your discipleship. She has to feel like she's a part of it. If it's you doing the discipleship thing and they're back there, it's like, well, yeah, you either get on or get lost. It's like, that's not healthy. You bring your wife along. You include her in certain things, right?
Okay, so you were just talking about not necessarily sharing things that would be harmful.
Well, I'm talking about not sharing correction issues, things that you're dealing with, right? It's, if you bombed an outreach and Pastor Greg is like, or Pastor Jesse is correcting on on a technique in preaching, or whatever the situation, you have to understand there's hundreds and hundreds of different situations that you could be corrected on.
Yeah.
But in communicating with your wife, it's where are we going, what are we doing, right? And so leaving out certain things, like when pastor corrects you, when pastor has to discipline you or whatever, that's not necessarily unhealthy to, you know, not overshare the whole thing with your wife.
You can share, or an example of the things you can share.
If you're taken out of ministry, your wife will want to know why.
Yeah.
Right? That's the ultimate extreme. If you're like, no, not saying, not telling. You know. But, you know, examples, if you're preaching in 180 and you forgot to mention Jesus, and pastor has to talk to you about that, and you tell your wife, yeah, that altar call, I forgot to mention Jesus. And she'd be like, yeah, you should probably mention him. That's probably not going to damage her view of pastor. That's a healthy thing, right? But we can go around all day, different thing. What about this? What about that? You have to be wise. Understand basic Bible doctrine. Your wife is the weaker vessel. And you can say things to her that maybe you're like, yeah, whatever. But to her, it means a lot. Her value, her self-worth. You know, her investing and sacrificing to be in the ministry because you are called to preach. It's like, that's a lot for them. Right? So our job is to protect our wives. So that's what I'm preaching on tonight. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, sometimes, sure, and in any situation of correction that pastor gives you, you know, it's important to own it. It's like, yeah, pastor pointed out some things that I've noticed in me that aren't healthy. It's, you know, I'm not praying like I should be, reading my Bible, whatever the situation is. And then when you own it, it makes it a little bit more personal. Then it's not like, he said this, he said, like you said, that I'm sure that helps, you know, but biggest thing, yeah, overall, you just have to remember, it's like, you've got to protect your wife from yourself sometimes, right? That'll be helpful. Anything else? Yeah, Edgar?
Lay out a difference between correction and discipline.
Yeah, I mean, discipline is an action behind a correction. In my understanding, in my mind, you know, the idea of being disciplined, we think of that as you were pastoring and there was a moral failure, there was a something happened to warrant discipline, where it says you're removed. If you're involved in ministry and you got into something that you shouldn't have, whether that be immoral or it could have been many different things, but as far as discipline goes, it's usually a removal from a certain ministry, right? Correction is, it's like, hey, you're getting off track here. Course correction, let's adjust, right? Discipline is like you were willful, involved in sin, whatever the situation is. Now, it's not healthy for the church for you to be in public ministry anymore for a time, right? That could be. That helps. Anybody else?
Yeah. If someone is unrepentant and they've been removed out of ministry multiple times and corrected multiple times and talked to you, you know, and it's been just been years of this and they're clearly not making any progress, but they continue to come to you and just say, hey, you know, this is happening, whatever. Is there anything you do more than that, or you just continue to, you know, I mean, obviously, probably just wouldn't keep letting them back in if it's repeated over and over and over again. But how would you handle, you know?
I don't know. That's kind of vague. That's not enough information. Typically, though, repeated offenders, repeated issues of gross sin, if there's something deeper at work, something fundamentally wrong, right? And I've had a conversation with the guy I can remember in 29 Paul that I told him he was a repeat, you know, he was heavily involved in pornography for months and months and months, and I'm like trying to work through it, giving him books, counseling him. And then I just said, look, you're telling me that the gospel of Jesus Christ works for everybody else except you. Mm. And he's like, no, I'm not saying that, you know. But then it came out, you know, a few weeks after that, it was actually way bigger than sure. that situation. And so it's like, okay, there you go. The issue wasn't the issue, right? Sometimes that works out over time. But your job as a pastor is you protect your church. You protect the congregation. I've seen guys, they get bound up in the weeds with one particular person who's like a repeat, involved in sin all the time, can never quite get over that. Meanwhile, your entire church is kind of like floundering. And it's like you're caught up in just this one person. It's like, it's not helping. People have to have a revelation. All right. Any more questions? Appreciate you guys' time. Thank you.